Paul Rogers has spent more than 4,300 consecutive days, over 12 years, locked behind a solid steel door in the bowels of a Pennsylvania prison. 24 hours of isolation, occasionally punctuated by an hour in another cage, ostensibly for recreation purposes, or a trip to the shower. Inside a concrete and steel tomb that is his bathroom, bedroom, and workspace, Paul eats, sleeps, dreams, defecates, reads, writes, and contemplates the prospect of spending the remainder of his life sentence subject to the psychological torment of solitary confinement. According to Paul, quote, "It's like mental torture, and you slowly lose your mind," unquote. Family members and supporters of Paul are guardedly optimistic that his nightmare may be coming to an end soon. He has once again been approved for release into the general population by the superintendent of the State Correctional Institute, Smithfield. For most prisoners in the hole, this would be sufficient for securing their release, but Paul is on the restricted release list, an indefinite, secretive, and potentially permanent form of solitary confinement that can only be authorized with the approval of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Central Office. The final decision on Paul's status rests with the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Secretary, John Wetzel. Here, prisoner rights advocate, operator of the Real Cost of Prisons website, and Solitary Watch board member, Lois Ahrens, discusses Paul's 12 years of solitary confinement and his struggle to maintain his mental health.
He's been in solitary for 12 years, but it's possible it's 13 years by now. He's 41 years old, so he's been there in solitary for a big chunk of his life. And he was placed in solitary back then because he had some kind of physical altercation with a guard. That's my understanding. And he was placed in solitary. From what I understand from him and also from somebody else that works with Paul, he's had no disciplinary infractions in 12 years. He has worked, through his letters, he has worked very, very hard to maintain his mental health. And he knows that sometimes he gets angry and sometimes he is despairing. And sometimes he has said, you know, he's felt sort of paranoid because he can hear people talking, but you never get to see them. And so he's had to deal with all of that. And the other thing that he does not know is how to get out of solitary. There's no written rules. And so he's in this place, but he doesn't know how to get out. There's no pathway. There's no rules for how to get out. So he's living in a cell that's 8 by 10 feet, which somebody once said is like the size of a parking space. He's been there for 12 years or a little more than 12 years, very little contact. He's locked in a box for 23 hours a day. On the weekends, he doesn't get out at all. He gets his food through a slot in the door. Even if his family does manage to come to see him, there's no contact visits. If he gets moved anywhere, he's shackled. And so this is his life. And somehow, despite all of this, he has managed to be a very amazing person. He has survived, not just survived, but he has these inner resources where he has been able to actually thrive.
Paul's sister, Carla Rogers, spoke with us about the difficulty of keeping a close relationship with her big brother under the circumstances of a life sentence and indefinite solitary confinement.
It's very, very, very difficult. One is because the visits are 5 hours up and 5 hours back for the ride. If we're lucky, we'll get a 2-hour visit. If we're lucky, in the past, we've been approved to stay a little longer. They're on the weekday. So we had to take off of work. They're behind glass, so my brother doesn't know how we feel. It's very difficult. It's hard because you have timed conversations. I have a daughter that I try my best to keep him a part of her life as far as because she doesn't know him physically, but, you know, I've taken her to see him. So it's very hard because he was a very important centerpiece of my life, being a big brother. So it's very difficult. It's very difficult to express frustrations, conversation in letter writing. You can't get everything out. It's hard to do that over the phone because the lady comes on and she cuts your conversation off. Sometimes it gets hard within the letter because you want to make sure that you're saying the right thing, and miscommunication from just what you write and how you intended for a person to receive it, sometimes it's wrong. Luckily, we know each other. We've been able to keep in contact over the years, so we haven't lost our connection as far as knowing who each other are. So it's very, very, very difficult. I chose at a younger age to make sure that, not that I pretend, but I incorporate him in my everyday life as if he didn't miss a beat. So I chose to make sure I keep in contact and let him know what's going on, conversations, and keep up and, you know, try not to stray too far away. The reach out process has been hard because you kind of, you know, you go back and forth with knowing who's going to help, who can help, where to turn to, how serious or how real, you know, people, and how genuine people are for the cause. Like, I mean, I'm quite sure there's people that have done horrible things, but my brother is in prison for one thing. It's not to say that it's great or grand or proud of, or I'm trying to justify it. And you have to kind of, but he was 19 years old. And he has to pay for this thing for the rest of his life. I mean, being in prison for life, I think, is a sentence within itself, evidently. But to torture and go through the stuff that they had to go through on top of this, and the fact of the matter that the people that go to work that they quote-unquote live with every day wake up in their lives and just what they set out to do is to make somebody else's life miserable. That just, I don't get that.
Lois Ahrens emphasized the lack of standards governing the use of long-term solitary confinement and Paul's dignity in the face of a system designed to crush him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get these, you know, these very non-committed. He's working his way out of solitary, whatever in the world that means. You know, he's working hard on it. I mean, it's complete obfuscating language. I mean, it means nothing. It's meaningless. I mean, Paul wrote this essay, which is on the website, you know, still in illegal limbo, which is really where it's at. And, I mean, there's no due process. There's nothing. It's like falling down a rabbit hole, you know, and there's no ladder back up. Nobody tells you what the ladder is, how to get back up. Well, what is it about Paul is that I think that, I mean, to me, he exemplifies someone who really struggles to maintain being emotionally healthy, struggles to keep growing and changing, and that really, you know, exemplifies someone who can have this kind of dignity and positiveness despite every single effort by a system that is designed to crush him. I mean, it's set up to crush people. And he is someone who has not been crushed.
Carla underscored the importance of learning from and supporting others who have loved ones in solitary confinement.
One good thing that I've learned, because I fell off, is that we have to be an advocate and participate more so in the other things and get to know the other families that's going through the same thing we are, to know what to do. And to keep, you know, life gets in the way of life. But you always got to come back and, you know, ground yourself, because we have to take care of the ones that we love that are incarcerated.
Family and supporters of Paul are asking those with loved ones in prison, human rights defenders, opponents of torture, and otherwise concerned members of the public to write letters and make calls to Secretary Wetzel in support of Paul's release from solitary confinement into general population. Visit www.hrcoalition.org, that's hrcoalition.org, for information on how to support Paul.